We began Sefer Vayikra just days ago, and there's a very interesting Rashi that I'd like to study with you in Vayikra Hey, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Okay then, so if you could open up to Vayikra Hey, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Now, we're talking about what's called Me'ilah. Let me explain to you what Me'ilah is, in case you don't know. If a person misappropriates Hegdesh, that means there's property that belongs to Hegdesh, it belongs monetarily to the Beis HaMikdash, and he decides he's going to go ahead and use it for his own purposes. So in Vayikra Hey Pasuk Yud Dalid, the Pasuk says, Nefesh ki simol mal v'chat'a b'shkaga mikodshe Hashem. So what's the punishment for a person who's timol mal? That means he violated the Iser of Me'ilah. And the answer is, Vehevi es ashamo l'ashem. He has to bring what's called an asham Me'ilah. And the word asham, which is a category of carbon, is loosely translated to English as a guilt offering. And in the Mishnayos that we read at the end of Karbanos in the morning, you may remember there's a list of categories of asham, and one of them is called an asham me'ilah. So again, something was sanctified, was sacred to Hashem, and now he uses it for his own purposes. He has to bring a karban asham, and what does he have to bring? The Torah says he should bring ayal tamim, which means an unblemished ayal, is a kind of a ram, I guess, in English, minatzon, from the flock, be erkecha kesef shkolim b'shekel hakodesh la'asham. In other words, the value of this asham has to be that of 2 silver shekels, and that's called an asham. So if you have Rashi says the following, ki timol mal. Rashi is interested in the word, the meaning of the, etymologically, the meaning of the word ma'al, me'ilah. And he says, ein me'ilah b'chol makom. He says, whenever you see the word me'ilah, what does it mean? Ela shinui. Shinui literally means a change. And to prove this, Rashi quotes 2 psukim. Oddly enough, he quotes them out of order in the sequence in Tanakh. He starts with a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, which is at the very end of Tanakh. And there it says, Vayimalu belokei avoseihem, vayiznu achrei Elohei ame ha'aretz. In other words, they did this me'ilah, betraying the God of their avos, of their fathers, and they strayed after the gods of the nations of the earth. Then Rashi quotes a pasuk in Parshas Noso in Bamidbar, and there it says regarding the Sota who betrayed against her husband, Rashi quotes the pasuk Mala Bo Mal. So you'll notice that in both of these psukim, the word Me'ilah, or in the noun, or Vayimalu Mala in the verb, and Rashi uses those 2 psukim as the basis for his conclusion that what's involved here is a shinui, some sort of a change. Now, Rashi himself is based on a Gemara in Me'ilah, that's the Masechta called Me'ilah, which deals with all these laws. Actually, the Gemara in Pesach in Me'ilah really brings down the Pasuk in Sota first, and afterwards the Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim regarding Tavodah Zarah. Rashi switched the order around. And it's a little bit strange that Rashi would do that. Not only that, he's quoting a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim before he quotes the pasuk in Bamidbar. But in any event, what we really want to focus our attention on is this pasuk in Divrei Hayomim. Now, Divrei Hayomim, of course, is at the end of Tanakh. And we're talking about someone who worshipped another god. And certainly the word Me'ilah means a betrayal, to betray God, the one God, and to serve the gods of the world. Now, if you take a look in the Pasuk in Bamidbar. Now you have to turn to Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Tes Zayin. So you'll see there that the word Mi'ila appears even earlier than Divrei Hayomim, for sure. And the Torah there says, Hein heina hoyu livnei Yisrael b'dvar Bilam limsar mal b'ashem. Again the word mal. And yet Rashi doesn't quote that pasuk. The Gemara doesn't quote that pasuk. If you fast forward to the end of the Chumash, in Dvarim Lamed Beis, pasuk Nun Aleph, it says, Alashar ma'alta bi b'toch b'nei Yisrael b'mei meriva kadesh. In other words, you betrayed me at the waters of Meriva, of Kadesh. So again, what we want to know is, what did Rashi find in the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim about violating Avodah Zarah, when we have many psukim in the Torah way before Divrei Hayomim that indicate that Mal and Me'ila means to betray? And secondly, what we'd like to understand is, what's the relationship between betrayal, here the word me'ila, and change? Rashi, if you remember, identifies me'ila as change. Well, betrayal implies some sort of a sin. Now, if you take the case of misappropriating hegdesh, so that involves a change. Why? Because the halacha is, the law is, that when a person misappropriates Hegdesh, it loses its status as Hegdesh. That's called Yatza L'chulin. And it no longer has the status of a sacred object. And what that basically means is that you've changed the object intrinsically. So then I can understand that the word change applies to Me'ila. Now, in the case of someone who worships Avodah Zarah, that's the Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, there's also, perhaps one could say, is some sort of variable of change, or some sort of dimension of change, not only in terms of an object that was intended to be used for Kodesh, but here, he was worshipping Hashem, and now he starts worshipping an idol. That also is a pretty radical change. In the case of the pasuk in Sota, in Bamidbar, she was dedicated or loyal to her husband, and now a tremendous change took place, and she now has a relationship with another man. So basically what Rashi is saying is that the cause of Me'ila is when a person sees two things that are fundamentally different, and he doesn't mind confusing them and equating them and changing one for the other. You know, they're worshipping their gods. Well, okay, I'll stop worshipping my god. I'll make that change. You know, she's got a husband, and now she'll change this guy with another guy. And in the case of Me'ila, instead of relating to the object with all its sanctity and the awesome fear that we're supposed to have about Hegdesh, I'm going to treat it as if it's chulin, as if it's not sanctified at all. Now, why do I mention this discussion about change? And we're a few days before Pesach, because Chazal tell us, it's a Shmos Rabbah, that's the Medrash Rabbah on Shmos, that the reason why Klal Yisrael merited the redemption is because of three things that they didn't change. I'll read to you the language of the Medrash. Omar Avuna, Bar Kapora, Bishvil Dalid Varim Nigalu Yisrael Mitzrayim. There were four things that merited redemption from Egypt. And the first three out of the four are Shaloshinu Eshmam, Shaloshinu Es Lishonam, Shaloshinu Es Malbusham. They didn't change their names, they didn't change their language, they didn't change their dress habits. You'll see something very similar in the Psikta. You know, there are four Lashonas of Geula. It says, Votseisi, Vitzalti, Vigalti, Vilakachti. And the Mechilta says, Keneged Arba Zchuyo Shebiyodam. There were four merits that they have. And corresponding to those four merits are the four Lashonas of Geula. And the first three of those four merits are Shaloshinu es Lishonam, they didn't change the language. Loshinu es Simlosam, they didn't change their dress. Loshinu es Lishonam, they didn't, ignore their language. You know, they kept up with their language. Now, what I would like to understand is, okay, Klal Yisrael didn't change their names, their language, their mode of dress. Is that such a major merit? I mean, Chazal tell us that when Klal Yisrael reached the Yam Suf, the Malach HaShoyis came in front of the Ribbono Shalom and they said, what are you going to split the Yam Suf for them? Halolu Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Valolu Ovdei Avodah Zarah. It means that the Jewish nation reached that lowest depth, what we call the 49th level of Tumah, if you're familiar with that phrase, and they actually were worshipping idols. So, okay, they didn't change their dress, they didn't change their names, they didn't change their language, but after all, if they're worshipping Avodah Zarah, you know that Avodah Zarah, I don't have to tell you, is such a major transgression that even though the Torah says, V'chai b'hem, we should live by them, if somebody forces me to worship Avodah Zarah, or he threatens to kill me, what's the din in that case?
You have to give up your life.
Yeah, you have to give your life. You have to be ready to die. Now, that's the major prohibition or transgression of Avodah Zarah. And Klal Yisrael fell to that level. In fact, if you open up to Shmos Yud Beis, take a look in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, it says over there in the Pasuk, do you have it? Yud Beis Chaf Aleph. What page is that on? If you, I'll announce the page, make it a little easier for you.
Three, five, four.
Oh, that's in that one, 354. And in your blue chumash, what? Yud Beis, Perek Yud Beis, and we're looking at Pasuk Chaf Aleph.
It's 154.
154. And there the Pasuk says, Vayikra Moshe l'chol ziknei Yisrael v'yomar lehem, this is at the tzivui of the Korban Pesach, Mishchu ukhu lachem tzon l'mishpachoseichem v'shachtu ha-Pesach. So Moshe calls the elders of the people and he tells them, draw from your livestock and take for yourselves a sheep for your families, slaughter the Korban Pesach. And then Moshe, when he tells the elders, he says, Mishchu yedeichem me'avodah zarah, according to Chazal. I'm reading the Medrash on this pasuk. Vehidbiku b'mitzvos, vehidavku b'mitzvos. Now, as we see clearly that until that point, Bnei Yisrael were guilty of idolatry. And you know that back in the day, they used to worship idols and animals. And this is the most severe crime that you can imagine. And now they find themselves on the shores of Yam Suf in a very precarious position. So the angels in heaven, what we call the Kategorim, the prosecuting angels, they say, you know what, just like the Egyptians deserve to be drowned for what they did, the Jews also deserve to be drowned because their idol worship is just like the Egyptians. Halolu Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Halolu Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So what good is the fact that they kept their names? You know, the guy still calls himself Yaakov or Yisrael or whatever name he has. He speaks Hebrew and he wears Jewish clothing. These seem to be minor achievements. What do you say?
Qualities
relative to the huge, huge transgression of Avodah Zarah. And yet Chazal over and over again speak about the fact Lo Shinu, that they didn't change. And then I want to give you another example. This is really from left field. The Gemara in Gittin on Daf Hayam and Beis says the following, that when a sofer, a scribe, is called upon to write a get, he's not allowed to change at all from the format that Chazal created for the get. And Rav Meir said, "Kol ha-mishanah mi-matbeah she-tovu chacham be-gitin yotzei va-vlad mamzer," that we will invalidate the get, the children will be mamzerim. Why? Because he changed the wording of the get. I mean, again, we see that, you know, the idea of change becomes so significant. Rashi says Me'ila is change. Chazal say we were merited Geula because we didn't change. And if a person changes the status, or shall I say the text, the nusach of a get, the matbeah shall get, then the get is invalid. And if she goes ahead and lives with some other man, the children are mamzerim. So I have here in front of me a story from Rav Avraham Moshe Baum. Now, who is Rav Avraham Moshe Baum? You know, the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, destroyed whatever they destroyed. I don't have to tell you, but amongst the Hasidim, there was one Hasidus that you hardly ever hear of today. It was the largest Hasidus before the Nazis came to power. That was called the Alexander Hasidim. You probably never heard of them, because he did such a great job. He killed out all the Alexander Hasidim. And to the best of my knowledge, there was one survivor from Alexander, from the Alexander Hasidim. His name is Rav Avraham Moshe Baum. And he heard from his father, Rav Kalman Baum, a certain statement that we have no, you know, we have no, shall I say, independent, what word am I looking for, corroboration of that tradition. Now, this Rav Kalman Baum unfortunately didn't survive, but nevertheless, as a youth, he traveled all the way to the Rebbe Rebunim. I don't know if you ever heard of the Rebbe Rebunim of Psichsa, who was a great genius and a very holy person. And he says this Rav Avraham Moshe that he heard from his father, who in his youth traveled to this town to hear Rabbi Bunim, that Rabbi Bunim was learning Masechta Bava Kamma. Now in Masechta Bava Kamma there's a parak called Merubah, and those laws in Masechta Merubah deal with stealing and ownership over a stolen object. Now amongst the laws of Masechta Bava Kamma there's one law which is very central called Shinui, which means that if the thief stole object A and he transforms the object, and now it no longer looks like the object that he stole. Let's say, for example, he steals wheat and he grinds it into a flour. So the Gemara establishes that the ganav in such a case is kona b'shinui, which means that he no longer has to return the object because the object has been changed. He only has to pay the value of the object as it were valued at the time that he stole it. So basically, effectively, he's really created a new object that replaces the old object. There was a chiyuv hashava to return the old object, but the old object is gone. So he no longer has to return the old object that he stole because it doesn't exist anymore. It's sufficient that he pay back what's called damim, meaning the monetary value. Then the Gemara goes on to ask, what about a case where the god of the thief didn't make any physical change in the object, but he changed the use of the object? That's called not shinui begufo, but rather shinui shem. He changes the name of the object. For example, let's say he stole an animal, and the animal has hides, and he doesn't change the physical molecular structure of the hides, but he designates it for a certain particular use. He's going to use it as a rug or whatever, you know, whatever you do with hides. So the Gemara says that if the name has changed, is that enough to be considered as if the old object no longer exists and the ganav made a kinyan on the new object because the old object doesn't exist, even though no physical change has taken place? Just the name is different, correct? That's called shinui hashem. Any event, the Rebbe Rabbeinu Bunim got to a line in the Gemara. This is Bava Kamma Samech Vav Amud Beis, and it says the following: Hi Milsa, this issue about whether Shinui Hashem, when you change the designation of an object and it has a new name, Kashi Bei Rava L'Rav Yosef Esrim V'Tartin Shonin, for 22 years, Rav Yosef posed this question. He couldn't come to any conclusion. The Gemara goes on to tell us, Lo ifriki ad, he wasn't able to come to any determination, he was confused, ad Yosef Rav Yosef Bereisha, until Rav Yosef was appointed as the Rosh Yeshiva, the head of the Yeshiva. Uparke, and then he came to the conclusion, Shini Hashem kishini Maisa Domi, that the law of Shini Hashem is identical to that of Shini Maisa, meaning if he physically changes the object, then for sure he was Kona the Gneva. Now comes Rav Yosef to the conclusion after 22 years of deliberation, that if he doesn't physically change it, but he changes it in terms of its Ye'ud, meaning of what it's designated for, and that generates a Shinui Hashem, now he's Kone, he has the same status as someone who physically changed it. And the question is, after 22 years of deliberating this issue back and forth, why did he finally come up with the real pshat on the very day that he was appointed as Rosh Hashiva?
You know, he had a Shinui Hashem.
Exactly. Beautiful. So Rabbanim said that he had a Shinui Hashem. He was changed. There was no material change. He was still the same Rav Yosef. He didn't look any different. But Rav Yosef underwent a name change. He was appointed as Rosh Hashiva. In other words, this new title somehow made a fundamental change within his very essence, his personality. And now he was endowed with new insights, new strengths, new abilities. And he began to understand things that he couldn't understand before. In any event, this story is being quoted, Aleph, because it's very interesting, and secondly, we have no Mesoris other than this, you know, one survivor. And perhaps this idea of shinui, of change, will reflect on what Klal Yisrael were like when they didn't change their name. So we ask the question, what's such a big deal? They didn't change their dress, they didn't change their language, they didn't change their names. They had transgressed even Avodah Zarah, very serious prohibitions, which is the Avi Avos of all the prohibitions. And yet, they maintained some sort of unique Jewishness. What was the unique Jewishness? The fact that they maintained the language and the dress code. They maintained the names that they were used to. In other words, they did not totally assimilate into Egyptian society. So again, even though they imitated the Mitzrayim and they sinned in Avodah Zarah, but nevertheless, these details, which look on the face of it to be trivial, they didn't change their language, their names, and their dress. That somehow reflects on the fact that they wanted to remain connected to their ancestors, to the tradition of their forefathers. And that itself is worth a lot. For example, in America, and perhaps also in England, I don't know, there's something called the conservative movement. Have you heard of it?
Yeah.
And the conservatives are not as careful about halacha as the Orthodox, but nevertheless, they try to maintain traditions. And if you ask me, well, is it a good thing for the Jews that this conservative Judaism, is it not a good thing for the Jews? I can't answer that question. You have to ask the giants. What I will tell you is that I have a couple of friends who came through the conservative movement and became Orthodox. I know other people who, unfortunately, you know, their children intermarried and so forth and so on. And that could happen anywhere, in any Jewish community. But the point is that my friends remained somehow loyal to the tradition. They didn't have the mitzvahs yet, and they weren't committed to the observance of the halacha meticulously, but nevertheless, they had traditions. They knew about things like Shabbos, and they were part of, I don't know if you ever heard an organization called the USY, you know, and they have dances on Motzei Shabbos, so they would dance together with, you know, the boys and the girls, but it kept them within the Jewish fold. And they became proud Jews. And some of them went on to investigate their Judaism and get more and more involved. Some of them came to Israel on various programs and so forth and so on. My son was in Portland, Oregon. And after his first year in Portland, he told us about a young girl, and she used to come very often to the house for Shabbos. Her name is Leanne, and she was coming to Israel on a program with the conservative movement, and we should invite her for a Shabbos. So we invited her for Shabbos, and we fell in love with her. So we said to Leanne, you have an open ticket, you know, whenever you want to come for Shabbos. And I'm not taking any credit for this, but at the end of the day, she left that program and she joined an Orthodox program. And today she's married to a Ben Torah who teaches Torah. It's really amazing. But you keep a person in the fold. And Klal Yisrael was still proud of their Jewish heritage. They identified with that tradition. And perhaps this is what it's all about. In other words, if you have a lo shina es shma malbushim lishonam, And if there's a true desire to remain connected to the tradition of our avos, that can really be the potential to eventually develop a much more profound connection to the Jewish people. And that's why the Torah has a very unique, I would call it, dialectical relationship to change. On the one hand, the study of Torah highly encourages chidush. Chidush is called insights or innovations. And that means to come up with something new. But on the other hand, the Torah recognizes and encourages change within a certain framework, within a certain tradition. If you're playing with the rules, you have the Mesorah, you know how to extend those rules, how to define them, how to get new innovations. What we need is an obligation to values and to allegiance to a tradition, and then there's a lot of room for creativity. Go ahead. Well, it works like this. George, your question requires at least an hour's discussion, but I would say just from the top, you know. There's what's called normative halacha, and that's a practical change, and then it's called theoretical halacha. Theoretical halacha means that if I'm operating within the system, I came up with a chiddush, that's called elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. It has the status of Torah, and anyone who studies that chiddush is considered like he's studying Torah. However, if I come to normative halacha, and now I want a paskin, a shayla, for that I have to be a posek. What's a posek? I don't know what a posek is, but just in general, a posek is someone who's not just an expert in the theoretical halacha, but also in the practical halacha. The practical halacha sometimes is quite different or distant from the original theoretical halacha. There are so many different considerations that come to play. So when you talk about chiddush, I don't know, la halacha to be mechadish something that has practical implications, I'm not denying it. I mean, my Rebbe once came to the conclusion in a shiur that the ikar mitzvah of tzitzis is to wear what's called a talis gadol, means something that covers most of your body, and that the talis katan is really only the rabbanon, it's not the real mitzvah, the real makoy mitzvah. And I came over to him after the Shia. I was still single then, and I wasn't wearing a talis as a single man. So I said to him, Rebbe, I only wear a talis katan. So he slowed down for a second. He said, let's sit down. And he asked me what the minig of my family was, and I told him that until we're married, we don't wear a talis. So he told me to discuss it with my father, and if my father gave me the okay, I could wear a talis. And not only did I wear a talis as a single fellow, but all my children... Well, I mean, I only have three boys, but I have three girls, so it's not relevant to the girls, but the boys all wear talisim. And not only that, I taught it to my class, and a number of members of my class came back to me, and they told me we had a discussion with our dad, based on your shir, and we came to the conclusion that it's a right thing to do, to wear a talis. The only drawback is, then they don't know if you're in shidduchim or not, because they think you're married. but assuming that you can obviate that problem. So in other words, again, we are in favor of innovation. But as long as we have an allegiance and a commitment to the values, that we cannot confuse. We have to have the right perspective. Okay? So the Pasuk says, now we get back to our original question, why Rashi, at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, quotes the Pasuk, Vayimalu Belokei Avoseim Vayiznu Achrei Elohei Amearetz. Why does Rashi choose that Pasuk, which is a Pasuk in Divrei Hayom at the very end of Tanakh, when the Pasuk of Vayimalu Mal, or any forms and conjugations of Me'il, appears all over the place? The answer is Hashem wanted to say that, you know, when it's Me'ilah, when have you crossed all the red lines and you've made a change that's going to uproot you from the Jewish nation? That's when it's Vayiznu. That's when you worship Avodah Zarah and you completely cut yourself off from your heritage. That means, says Rashi, you get swept aside by the pagan culture and you look and dress and speak like the pagans. That's what Rashi wants to get from the Pasuk at the end of Tanakh. And that's why Rashi takes this Pasuk and he puts it up front, because he wants to say that a total change from the tradition of your parents, of your ancestors, that's what's going to ultimately do you in, and that's the ultimate Me'ilah. That's the kind of change that breaks from tradition and therefore brings you outside, so to speak, the pale of being part of the Jewish nation. You know that many of the greats would bake their own matzahs. Did you know that? And I often wondered about that. Why bake your own matzahs? After all, you can buy matzahs that have a hechsher, you know, a good ashgacha, and baking matzahs is an unbelievable undertaking. I have a friend that spends 8 hours, and he comes out with 3 matzahs. You think I'm joking with you? I can see it, Harvey, the way you're looking at me. What? No, I mean it seriously. This guy's a great scholar, but there's certain tradition that we get from our forefathers, and that's the minhag that we get to bake matzahs. I don't have that minhag. I don't remember my father ever baking matzahs. I was raised in Flatbush. He didn't bake matzahs, but here in Yerushalayim, it became a big thing to the whole group of a unit of yeshiva students or talmidei chacham, and they'll rent a bakery for a day, and they'll clean it out and bake it, the matzahs, and they come out with 3 burnt matzahs. Shkoyach. You know, I think I'm going to be mochel in that minhag. But anyway, there is a great minhag. The Arizal used to say when he sweat, when he baked the matzahs, that he used to say about the zeah, the sweat itself, it's zeah shel kedusha. It has a certain sanctity to it because, you know, he sweat for the sake of baking the matzahs. In any event, those are traditions that people have. Everybody has their own traditions and their own, you know, their own minhagim. And the important thing is to remain within that. Not to do a me'ila. Me'ila means a radical change. Okay, we'll put that on the side for a second. Now, I found something fascinating in a sefer called Rokeach. The Rokeach lived about 6 centuries ago. And he talks about Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim, as you know, was authored by whom? Shlomo HaMelech. But what you might not know is that Shir HaShirim has how many psukim? 117 psukim. Now, why is that so significant?
It's the number.
Oh, why is that number significant? That number 117. And you know, at the end of each book of Tanakh, there's something called a simon, where they tell you how many verses there are in that book. So at the end of the book of Shir HaShirim, which is one of the 5 Megillos, that's included in the 24 books of Tanakh, it says, Simonech, he writes, Psukei Sefer Shir HaShirim, Mea V'Shvayasar, 117. I don't know if you have it at the end of your Shir HaShirim there, in the blue Chumash. I'm not sure if you have it. But in any event, He tells you the Simon is a pasuk about Chachech Kiyayin Hatov, Holech Lidodi. You know, all of Shir HaShirim speaks about a wonderful wine that the beloved gives, you know, to her beloved. That's part of the Yayin Hatov, and that Yayin Hatov is the number 117. Now, I'm not sure exactly how he sees the number 117. He has 117 psukim. Just 1 second. Oh, I see. He's adding the chav. Okay, fine. Anyway, what I wanted to get to is the Maaser Rokeach. The Maaser Rokeach wants to know what's the significance of the number 117. So he quotes a Medrash in Shir HaShirim. And the Medrash in Shir HaShirim accuses Shlomo HaMelech, the author of Shir HaShirim, of violating 3 averus of the Torah, which are all called Lo Tarbu. Lo Tarbu means don't have too many high numbers, I guess you'd say. What do you say?
Yes.
So it says the following. Lo Tarbu Lo Susim, a king in Israel is not allowed to have too many horses. Lo Tarbu Lo Noshim, he's not allowed to be married to too many wives. And Lo Tarbu Lo Kesef Izov, he shouldn't have too much
money.
And there's a whole Masechta that deals with these Isurim, exactly how much. But in any event, Shlomo Melech, what we call Hifriz al Amidah, he went too far, and he exceeded his bounds in all these three Isurim. Then the Medrash goes on to say that despite that fact, he was, what's the word I want to use? He was, he was forgiven. I guess I'll use that word. In any event, he was granted mechila. Is there a better word for that than forgiven? If you could help me out here with the English. No. Okay, anyway, Hashem forgave him for those sins. Why? So obviously he did some sort of a tshuva, but that's not what it says in the Medrash. The Medrash says the following, that Maisa Shlomo HaMelech HaYudomim Li'aviv. In other words, Shlomo HaMelech had one particular merit that the Medrash singles out as the key to his being accepted by Hashem for penitence, and he derived it from his father David, meaning Shlomo imitated his father. Shedavid Amar Shirim, David authored many songs. These are the songs that we sing in Tehillim. Ushlomo Amar, and Shlomo authored Shir HaShirim, the song of the songs. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi Amar Hoil Viat Makisho Mikol Tzad, since there's an equation here between Shlomo and his father David, in which Shlomo imitates his father. Therefore, ma oviv nimchalu lo avonosov, af zeh, this person too, Shlomo Melech, kayotzibo. He too achieved forgiveness from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can't tell you I understand the pshat here, but what I can tell you is that there's no question about the significance of thanking, praising Hashem, and singing songs of praise. That's what Shir HaShirim is all about. Says the Sefer HaRokeach that this conclusion of the Medrash about the fact that Hashem was Mochel the Avonos of Shlomo is based on another Medrash. And this is the Medrash that appears after the what's called Shira Sayam, meaning after the splitting of the Red Sea, the people of Israel recited Shira. And the Medrash says, "Kol Misha Omer Shira Al Anes," anyone who sings out a song of praise because of God's miracles, Shenasa Lo, which were performed for his benefit, Nimcha Lo Kol Avonosov, he will be completely atoned for all his sins. And the Medrash says, how do I know this? Yalfinim lo li'achar shir sayom, after they sang the shira at the Yamsuf, the Pasuk says, Vayisa Moshe es Yisrael, which means that Moshe caused the people of Israel to journey. But if you take the word Vayisa and you put a different vocalization, different vowels, it could be Vayasa Moshe es b'nei Yisrael. Vayasa Moshe means he took them from a low point and picked them up and brought them to a high point. And the Medrash says, "She see on me avanoseihem," that Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them that they were now free of sin. Why were they free of sin? We discussed before that they were guilty of so many sins, of avodah zarah even. And the answer is because they recited Shira. You see the power of Shira to bring about atonement. Obviously it has to be a sincere Shira. Is therefore Lachain, David Shlomo Sha'amru Shira, both of them created poetry, created songs, is Nimchu Lehem Avonoseihem. David was forgiven and Shlomo. Then it says, Shlomo Ofer Al Gimel Lavim, Hamurim B'melech Lo Yarbe. Three times the Torah says Lo Yarbe, with regard to Susim, Nashim, and Kesef, and Shlomo violated all of them. Now, if that be the case, then how many lashes do you get for violating a lav? Anybody know what the magic number is?
39.
Now if you multiply 39 times 3, if somebody can do that mathematics for me.
117.
He says that 117 malchus that he was chai for violating these three lavim was forgiven, was replaced by the Shir HaShirim, which has 100... and 17 psukim. So each one of those psukim is, it represents, reflects a shira, a song. Every verse is a song to God, and the 117 songs will replace and atone for the 117 malkas that he should have gotten as for violating three averos. However, the math doesn't work out so well, because the pasuk itself at the end of the Chumash in Parshas Ki Tetzeh, it doesn't say that we give him 39 lashes. What does the pasuk say? We give him 40 lashes. It says Arboim Yakenu. But the Gemara in Makos brings a tradition that even though the Torah says 39, it means like 30. Even though the Torah says 40, it means like 40, almost 40, approximately 40, but it really means 39. So the Chachamim took the number 40 and they subtracted from the number 40 one in each case. And therefore, there's a, so to speak, a differentiation between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. The oral Torah says 40 malchus. You multiply that, you get 120. You buy three. And the oral tradition, which is the Torah Shebaalpeh, says that it's only 39, but 3 is 117. Now, what we need is to get Shlomo on board as the advocator of Torah Shebaalpeh. If he waves the flag of Torah Shebaalpeh, then everything fits into place. Then his 117 verses in Shir HaShirim will be a kapara to replace the 117 malchus, if he is, I don't know what word, in aduk we say in Hebrew, if he's waving the banner of Torah Shebaalpeh. So this is the pasuk in Shir HaShirim. It says, Yishakeni minashikos piu ki tovim dodecha miyayin. He turns to Hashem and he says that your words are as sweet to me as yayin, as sweet wine. The Gemara says in Brachos, it's in Yerushalmi, Chavivin Divrei Sofrim, that means Rabbanon, Yosemi Divrei Torah, that words of the rabbis are even greater, more cherished in the eyes, more beloved in the eyes of God than even the Torah itself. So it comes out that when Shlomo Melech says Yishakeni Mishikos Fiki Tov Dodech Miyayin, he praises Hashem for the Yayin, and that Yayin is a reference to Torah Shebaalpeh, and Torah Shebaalpeh is even more sweet and more beloved than Torah Shebichtav, and therefore, since he, Shlomo, is absolutely dedicated to wave the banner and cherish Torah Shebaalpeh and call it Yayin, therefore he can reduce the number of malchus that he's chayiv from 40 down to 39, and that gives you 117 when you multiply it by the three lavim that he violated, keneged the 117 verses in Shir HaShirim. That is the Sefer HaRokeach. Pretty beautiful, no?
Yes.
So again, let's just review it. It's really impressive. Number one, there are 117 verses in Shir HaShirim, which was authored by Shlomo Melech. Is that coincidental, the number 117? Keep in mind that the Simon, if you go back to your first source, is V'chichech ki yayin atov. We're going to soon see that the word yayin here is a reference to Torah Shebaalpeh, the sweetness of Torah Shebaalpeh, the oral law. We know that Shlomo Melech violated Lo Yarbeh three times over. He was therefore chayev three times 39 malchus, which means 117 malchus, and the Medrash postulates that he got a kapara for these malchus by reciting Shira, by authoring Shira, and it's the Shir HaShirim, the song of all songs. And Chazal say that when the Jewish people at Yamsuf sang the song of Shir Hayam, the power of Shira is so great that it creates a mechila for all their averis. And Shlomo HaMelech created the Song of Songs, 117 psukim, all of which become a kapara to replace the 39 times 3 malchus that he was chayv. Ayel esmi akasha, but the Torah itself says 40 malchus, which means that he was shy 3 malchus from 117 to 120. The answer is that Shlomo Melech says, Yishakenu ki tovim dodecha miyayin, how much I love the words of the Chachamim that are like wine, because they allow me to reduce my punishment to from 40 down to 39 times 3 is 117. But my friends, the number 117 has an amazing significance. So far we've been talking just about the number of verses in Shir HaShirim that equal 117, which is the same as 39 times 3, and replaces the three sets of Malkus that Shlomo HaMelech was really guilty of. But now we have another significance to the number 117. Now the Chidah, who was one of the great Sephardic scholars, he lived about 2.5 centuries ago, his name was Azulai. He was a massive, prolific writer. You could probably fill up this table just with his books. One of his books is a Pirush, a commentary on the Haggadah Shel Pesach. And he speaks about the question of the Tam. The Tam asks a question, sort of what's called Mesiach Lefi Tumo. In other words, he's not really sharp and profound about how he formulates his question. He just says the words mazos. You know, what's going on? It's like a young child sometimes they don't know how to speak yet. So they just throw out some very vague kind of question. V'yamarta eila b'chosik yad hotziyonu Hashem Yitzrayim b'beis avod. So the Chidah quotes Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rabbeinu Ephraim was a Rishon amongst the Bali HaTosfos, and he wrote a commentary on the Torah. It wasn't published until very recently. It was passed down in a manuscript form. And the Chidah, who lived centuries ago, says that he had access to Rabbeinu Ephraim's manuscript. And he found in Rabbeinu Ephraim's manuscript an amazing line. And I'll read it to you. He says, Kuf Yud Zayin Shonim HaYeshibud B'Mitzrayim. The Jews were subjugated in Egypt for a total number of 117 years. And the Chidah goes on to write that I don't understand. There's no basis for this. How could Rabbeinu Ephraim say that the Shibud was 117 years? We know that the Shibud was much longer than that. It was more than 2 centuries even. They were in Mitzrayim for 4 centuries. So he quotes a sefer called the Seder Olam, which is also an old sefer. And he writes that Levi of course was the son of Amram, right? Amram was the son of Levi, but Levi was included in the Shvatim that went down to Mitzrayim. Remember, Yosef brought down the Shvatim. And Levi lived apparently a pretty long life, because it says that how long was it between the death of Levi and Yetzias Mitzrayim? Now I would have thought it should be hundreds and hundreds of years. No, Levi lived to a very ripe old age, and the distance, says the Seder Olam, in years between the death of Levi and Yetzias Mitzrayim was, you guessed it, 117 years.
No, it says 106.
Yeah, well then the Gra, if you take a look at the Gra, which you'll see in number 7,
yeah,
he changes it. He says, Kuf Yud Zayin Shana, Kach Tzarech Lomar. You know, the Vilna Gaon was the expert at correcting mistakes that fell into the tradition. For example, you can't learn the Yerushalmi today without the Gaon, because there's so many mistakes in the Yerushalmi, the texts we have. And the Gaon is the one who straightens it out. But the Gaon was almost obsessed with this job of fixing up mistakes. So in any event, in the Seder Olam, which you'll see in number 5 and number 6, I apologize, I didn't make enough copies, I didn't know you gentlemen were going to join me. But anyway, you can trust me, it says in the Medrash that when did the Shibud Mitzrayim begin? Only after the death of Levi. Because as you may recall, as long as the Shvatim were alive, the Mitzrayim had a certain awe of the original family of Yosef. So this is Yosef's brother Levi. Levi is still alive. They didn't have the audacity to enslave the Jewish people while Levi was alive. Maybe because the Jewish people themselves were on a higher level and they felt like mechubadim, you know, because Levi was still alive. Now Levi dies, the Shibud begins, Mishameis Levi is chilu amitzrim l'shabdam. And mikan omru is echad min ha'achim shameis, when a brother dies, is yidagu kol ha'achim. You know, everybody has to be worried and anxious, because if God took the life of one of the brothers, who knows what's going to happen afterwards. Not only that, echad min ha'chabura shameis, even if you have friends that belong to a membership club, a friendship club, is tidag kol ha'chabura. In any event, it says Ubnei Yisrael paru vayishritzu, and then it says Vayokom Melech Chadash, who didn't recognize the Shvatim, is that took place at the death of Levi, and Levi died 117 years before the Yitzias Mitzrayim. So how long were they Meshubadim to Mitzrayim? The Shibud lasted for 117 years. So the ben, Shoel Bitumo, right? We said that the child who's a Tam is a Mesiach Lefi Tumo, Mazos. Klomar, Ma kol ha-charada hazu, asher atem osim, kamen yonim zeich l'tzis v'shar melokach, hivtiach ha-kodesh baruch hu, el emes, li avram avinu olav ha-shalom, gamis ha-goy asher yavodu don anokh, yachken yotzim b'chush godo, v'kodesh baruch hu mekayim ha-moro. So when the Tam asks this question, Mazos, we think it's a naive question. But the Chidah sees depths and depths of meaning behind the question of the Tam. What the Tam is really asking is, what's the big deal? You're doing all these things to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch had to take us out of Mitzrayim because he had already given Avraham Avinu a divine promise that he would do so. In fact, he even went beyond that. He promised that they would leave Mitzrayim Berechush Gadol. So what's all the big deal? God lives up to his promise, and God is the Midah of Emes. Emes is another name for God. And he has to take us out of Mitzrayim. He's already committed to that way back in the time of the Bris Benim Son of Avraham. So you know what we answer him? You made a mistake. V'amarta Eila Bechozik Yad Hotzionu Hashem Mitzrayim Beis Avodim. God took us out of Mitzrayim way before, earlier than he was meant to do so, based on his original promise. V'yomalo aviv to'ato, you're making a big mistake. Atasavur, you think, mistakenly, ki yashavnu, tof shana, that we were in Mitzrayim as avodim for 400 years, v'gia eis lotzeis, and now is the time to go out. V'yotzienu Hashem, and God took us out of Mitzrayim, and he lived up to his promise. That's what you think, Mr. Tam. Okay, Rabbeinu Tam. Lo ken adomar. But rather, b'chozik yad hotzionu Hashem. Okay. Now let's take a look at that word, b'chozik. The last letter in that word is a kuf, which equals 100. The zayin is 7. And the ches is 8. 8 and 7. 15. The base of Bechozik is 2. If you add up all the letters and the numerical value, you get to 117. Bechozik Yad, meaning after 117 years, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. Here he had promised Avraham Avinu 400 years of Mitzrayim, and now Hashem takes us out after 117 years of Mitzrayim. The answer is HaKadosh Baruch Hu Choshev Machshavos Lo Tzionu Lifnei Azman. He is going to take us out before the time that was allotted, designated. Bechozik yad, yodo agdola v'chazoka v'gili rachamim gedolim. It's a great expression of compassion on the part of God, of mercy. For who pele ploy plos, shenasa lonu. He did amazing wonders. Alkein ton halil. Why is it that we make this whole big deal about it with the Seder, and we prepare for the Seder, and we go on and on with the Seder until we fall apart?
It's all fall asleep.
Till we fall asleep. And it's all because we have to give Hallel. We have to thank Hashem. Ein anuma speaking lahodos al Hallel. We can never give a sufficient amount of hodoy and Hallel. Al kol atova. May Alfi Revava 1/10,000th of what we should be giving. Because Hashem took us out way before the time that was allotted. So it's really interesting. You know, normally, if Hashem makes a promise, and we say that God, because of his mitzvah of emissary, has to live up to the promise, then we have to be avodim, we have to be meshubadim for 400 years. No! HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying the maximum, I will definitely take them out of Mitzrayim by the time we get to 400 years, but I can take them out earlier. That's only if I have rachamim gedolim. So I both say, this to me is a great chiddush, because I never believed in my life that the magic number of years in Shibud is what? Is 117. Now, after 117 years of Shibud, what's the first thing we have to do? Apparently, we deserved 117 years of Shibud. Now we have to look for a kapara mechila that Hashem should forgive us. And what's the most powerful method of mechila? What tool is going to bring mechila? No, nobody follows me? I feel a little badly that you're not... I guess I was a pedagogical flop here today. Uh-huh. The conduit for mechila is what? Hallel, excellent. It's Hallel. That's what we said, that when the Bnei Yisrael said Shira at Yom Suf, Hashem forgave them for all their sins. When Shlomo Melch wrote, he composed 117 verses of Shira Shirim, he was nimchal on such terrible averis that a melech is not allowed to overstep his bounds, A, B, and C. Here too, Klal Yisrael, immediately after they leave Mitzrayim, the first thing they do is they sing the Shir at the Yam, and that's going to be Mechila. We leave Mitzrayim. Chayav Adam Liros Satsmo, each person on the night of Pesach has to see himself that he left Mitzrayim. And he left Mitzrayim prematurely because of the Rachamim Gedolim that Hashem had. Bechozek, yeah, the word Bechozek is equal to 117. We only had 117 years. And each one of us has to feel like a slave that went out prematurely. We didn't deserve to be. Now we have to do a little bit more of an avoda, of a service to Hashem, in order to justify his compassion. And therefore, we have to recite Shira. All of Leil HaPesach is all about Shira. Now, in the next paragraph, honestly, I can't figure out the mathematics here. If anybody could help me with this, I would be appreciative.
Which one?
It says in the Haggadah, Vayered Mitzrayma, and the Baal HaGadah says, Onus al pi hadibur, means that Yaakov Avinu was forced by the command of God to go down to Mitzrayim. So again, he quotes the Chidah, and he says the following, this I can't figure it out. Vayered Mitzrayim, Onus. And he writes, Al, Onus Al. Okay, so he gets up to Onus Al. And he writes, Rashi Tevos, Gematria Kuf Yud Zayin, Remez Lamashakosu Beseder Olam de Mishameis Levi Ad Yitzisvame Kuf Yud Zayin Shonim. Now, what's this Rashi Tevos here of Kuf Yud Zayin? Where do you see here Kuf Yud Zayin? I mean, neither of those two words could possibly be Kuf Yud Zayin, because they both have a resh in it, which is 200. Let's take the word Onus. Maybe that would help us. Let's see, Nun is 50. Nun is 50. And Samach is 60. That's 100 and what?
10.
110. And then you add the Aleph and the Nun. And the Vav is Vav and Aleph. It's 7. Oh, that's what he means. Oh, Shkoyach. Thank you so much, Ira. Ira comes through in the clutch. The word Onus is Gematria Kuf Yud Zayin. So it means that Yaakov Avinu, representing Klal Yisrael, are going down to Mitzrayim. And how long are they going to be Mishubadim to Mitzrayim? For 117 years. Ubazeh pirashnu bani yosenu she'elas hatam. Okay, so he goes through the whole discussion about the question of the tam. Right? And the tam is asking a general question. You'll see on page 2 that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avraham Avinu that he would take us out. So what's all the fuss? And the answer is that Hashem took us out prematurely, earlier than the date. Bechozek Yad, with a shibud of 117 years. Kimispar Bechozek. Umiyam Alel Gvuros Hashem. And therefore we are going to sing all the Shira of Motzi Asirim, that Hashem took out the slaves. And that's what the answer is. We're singing the Shir for that. Wow, Rabosai, what I didn't know was that this concept that we mentioned earlier, that the Shibud only began after Levi's death, is written in Rashi. I didn't know that. Because if you open up to Shmos Perek Vav, Pasuk Ted Zayin, and look at Rashi there, it says, V'yele Shmos B'nei Levi, L'toldosam, Gershon, Ukahos, Umarori, and then it says Ushnechai Levi Sheva Ushloshim Umias Shana. So Rashi says Ushnechai Levi Loma Nimnu Shnosav Shel Levi Lodia Kama Yemea Shibut. He's going to teach us how long they were Mishubanim. She calls man she echem min hashvatim kayim lo haya shivut she nemar vayomas yosef chol echov, and then it says vayokam el chodesh, and they enslave the Jewish people. Levi herich yomim al kulam, and Rashi's quoting the Seder Olam. So this is a bit mind-boggling for me, that according to Rashi, the shivut only lasted 117 years. I'm a little bit embarrassed that I was not aware of this Rashi. In any event, Rabosi, I see that it's already 12 noon. Am I right? So we're gonna have to stop here. Although I had a little bit more to cover, we're almost at the end. I'll just mention one last thing and then let you go. It says, "Holach ma'anyo di ochlu avasonu bi'arad mitzrayim." Okay, now I need you to take out your pens and see if you can calculate this. Anybody willing to do that?
Yeah.
So we have a hay. Okay, write down, if you can, write down 5. Lachma is 30. Okay. Then we have Anya, which is an ayin. Okay. So how much are we up to so far? 105? Anybody have that? I think we had 5, 30, that's 35, and 70 for Anya, that's 135, right? 105, I'm sorry. Then D is a Dalid, is 109. Achlu Avosenu, our forefathers ate, that's Aleph and Aleph is 2. Where were we up to?
111.
With the 2, it's 111? Just again, one second. 35 is 105, 109, 111. Okay, now it's Bi'ara de Mitzrayim. So Bi'ara is 2. 113. And de Mitzrayim is 4. It's 117. Wow. Rosh Tevis Elu Bigmachia Kuf Yud Zayin. Remes Ki Agolus Shel Mitzrayim Ha Kuf Yud Zayin Shana. Wow. So when we start to say there, this is something you might want to say what you say there. We start with the claim, the pronouncement that Holach Ma'anya, that this Lechemoni is the Lechemoni that our forefathers ate in Mitzrayim. And if you take the gematria of each one of the first letters of this sentence, Holach Ma'anya Di'achol Avaseinu Ma'arav Mitzrayim, you end up with 117, which corresponds to the 117 years from the Ptira of Levi, after Levi died, until they left Mitzrayim. Those are the 117 years of Shibud B'Mitzrayim. Pretty impressive. Anyway, the number 117, which started with the verses in Shir Shirim, seems to reappear over and over again, and it all leads up to the concept of Shira, of songs, the song of Shira Shirim, the song of our Leil HaSeder, we should be Zochim Yitz Hashem, to be zocha, not to change, meaning to stay within tradition, innovation within tradition, and we should be zocha to shira, to appreciate all the miracles of Hashem, and then by praising Hashem and singing His songs, we'll be zocha mitzvah Hashem again to the gula shleima. Thank you. Thank you so much.